Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, December 7th. The headline reads, Veteran-owned coffee company opens first location in Midland. Shop to also offer food in partnership with local bakeries. By J.C. Lewis. Black Rifle Coffee Company's first Midland location officially opened on Monday at 3500 North Big Spring Street. The veteran-owned coffee company, based out of Salt Lake City, opened just in time for Christmas. Business partners James Gripp, Brett Johnson, Michael Blomqvist, Sean Lobo, and Chris Blomqvist had been fans of the coffee company for a while before they decided to bring the franchise to Midland, according to a Reporter Telegram story from May. The first location has an extended drive-through lane so vehicles won't back up onto Big Spring Street. The patio area has a fire pit and TV with outdoor seating. Grip said the patio will be enclosed with a fence so customers can hang outside with their dogs. Dogs at Black Rifle Coffee Company shops are a big deal, he added. The Instagram page at dogsofblackrifle documents dogs with their owners at shops around the country. Dogs can also get a whipped cream puppuccino when visiting the location. Grip said to keep an eye out for a grand opening event announcement, which will happen sometime in the middle of January, on the location's Instagram at BRCC Midland. The shop is also partnering with local bakeries, including Flower Child Baked Goods for biscotti and Bite at the Vineyard for breakfast pastries, including a jalapeno popper quiche, veggie frittata, sausage biscuit, double barrel kolache, and muffins. Customers can also buy grab-and-go sandwiches, canned espresso, curried cups, and Black Rifle Coffee Company apparel. During December, the coffee shop is featuring peppermint mocha lattes and gingerbread lattes. Customers also can buy 3 bags of coffee and get the 4th one free during a special promo. Hours of operation are 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Black Rifle Coffee Company will have a second shop across the street from Murray's Deli and the Imperial Shopping Center. This article is entitled, Jurors Begin to Hear Defense. Expert Witness Explains Texas's Castle Doctrine. By Iris Foster, Reporter Telegram. David Wilson's defense team began its case in the trial involving MPD officer Nathan Hayden Heidelberg's death with verbal sparring across the bar as an expert witness explained circumstantial evidence and the Texas version of the Castle Doctrine. Albert Rodriguez, a retired DPS commander who instructs Texas Rangers, among others, cited Texas Penal Code 9.32 and described it as, quote, reasonable belief that deadly force is necessary, unquote. He explained that it pertains to individuals as well as to law enforcement personnel. Although he admitted he has never been the lead investigator in a homicide, due to his 44 years in law enforcement and most recently as a force analyst, he has been asked to describe decision-making affecting the use of deadly force. This time, as he delved deep into his interpretation of the case, the prosecution objected to his analysis of the defendant's mental state on March 5, 2019. Nevertheless, based upon Ranger Allen's interview with the defendant on the date of the event, the witness was able to delineate many more circumstances, 25 versus 4, that Wilson would have taken into consideration. Ultimately, as Rodriguez examined the totality of the circumstances, he expressed surprise that Allen did not consider the issue of self-defense in this case. The day progressed through minute discussions about data entry errors and incompetence on the part of the alarm company and alarm monitoring company. The jury was given a crash course in security systems and which company performs which functions. In this case, a timer test done every day between midnight and 1 a.m. to check for system errors occurred at least 45 minutes late. Due to miscoding on February 21, 2019, the monitoring operators mistakenly believed the pool overhead door alarm had been triggered. This set into motion a string of actions which resulted in Heidelberg's non-survivable injury. Defense attorney Frank Sellers took the jury from a low-tech flip chart to laying the foundation for a high-tech, three-dimensional digital animation which is purported to replicate, using validating photography and motion capture systems, what the defendant saw on the night in question. District Attorney Laura Nodolf quizzed Manuel Mesa Arroyo extensively about his methods and asked him directly if the presence of a flashlight didn't mean the presence of a person behind it. The forensic investigator who works for ESI, Engineering Systems, Inc., and often deals with locomotive headlamp illumination in train crashes, walked the jury through his work on this case. He visited the defendant's home during similar nighttime conditions, built a timeline of events based on the existing videos, replicated his motion capture systems to show the defendant's movement and those of the first two responding officers, and took his own photos within the home. His conclusion was that, quote, "It's hard to see with a flashlight shining into a completely dark house. He couldn't even see his teammate who was holding the flashlight," unquote. The three-dimensional animation video should be part of Tuesday's offerings from the defense. This article is entitled "Board OK's New Dining Options" by Mella McEwen. New dining and entertainment options got the seal of approval at Monday's Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. Commissioners unanimously paved the way for Midland's second Black Rifle Coffee Company with the approval of a request by Maverick Engineering for a zone change from PD, Planned Development District, for a shopping center, to RR, Regional Retail District. Black Rifle Coffee, which just opened its first Midland location, will build at 3212 West Wadley Avenue. In addition to Black Rifle, a retail center is also planned for the site. Rusty Tacos received unanimously approval for its request for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant at its location in San Miguel Square, 3303 North Midkiff Road. The restaurant, which has yet to open, will be comprised of a 3,241 square feet with an alcohol serviceable area of 1,825 square feet inside and 1,416 square feet on the patio. Hours will be from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday through Thursday and 9 a.m. to midnight Friday and Saturday. Alcohol service would be from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, from 11 a.m. to midnight Friday and Saturday, and from noon to 10 p.m. on Sunday. Waystone Brewing, LLC, received approval for a specific use designation with term for the sale of alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a brewery for its location in Plaza Oaks Shopping Center, 2101 West Wadley Avenue. Owner Ted Morehouse said not only will Waystone sell beer, but homemade root beer, coffee, and other drinks. A food truck outside the business will offer food options. He said Waystone is designed to be a family-friendly enterprise for friends and families to gather and rent board games to play. There will be board games for children and those geared toward adults. "I have four kids under the age of 11, so it has to be family-friendly," he said. Hours will be from 5 to 10 p.m. Thursday and Friday, and from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday. In other action, J. Peño's Cafe at 4305 West Illinois Avenue received approval of its request for a specific use designation with term for the sale of alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant. The restaurant currently does not have the SUD and requested it to be able to sell alcoholic beverages. The restaurant will be open from 6:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Sunday, with alcohol service from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Sunday. Park Hill received approval, with staff recommended conditions, of a proposed preliminary plat in Great House Addition at Deer Run Avenue and Dunraven Court. The replat at 5210 Deer Run Avenue is for 13 lots for a future housing development that will be regulated under the TH, Townhouse Dwelling District. This article is entitled, Application Process Begins for Midland ISD's Choice Schools, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD has an important webpage for Midland ISD students and their families interested in learning about Midland ISD's schools of choice. The application process for those schools, Midland ISD's transfer process, or enrolling for schools through a web-based service called Skyward. It is called Apply Midland, and Tuesday, December 7th, is an important day, as the Apply Midland application period for the 2022-23 school year is set to begin. Apply Midland is MISD's platform to apply to schools of choice and for transfers. Apply Midland provides an equitable and consistent way for families to learn about MISD schools, apply to schools of choice, and submit transfer applications according to the district. Apply Midland is the go-to place for those with interest in having their children attend Carver Center, Bowie Fine Arts Academy, Washington STEM Academy, Pease Communications and Technology, Ben Milam International Academy, Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Elementary, 6th grade AVID at San Jacinto, Young Women's Leadership Academy, Early College High School, IDEA Travis, Gifted and Talented Program, Future 2nd to 12th grade. The deadline for gifted and talented applications is January 14th. For everyone else, round one closes January 18th. GT closes earlier to allow time for the testing needed. The application window for Apply Midland launches at 8 a.m. Tuesday and runs through 5 p.m. January 28th. Once all applications have been received, a lottery system will select from the applicant pool and automatically inform parents once school assignments have been made. Families will receive offers from schools in March. A second application period opens February 21st. Please call 432-240-1250 if you need assistance with registration, enrollment, or re-enrollment. The district also stated that there is a school fair on January 8th. Note about Carver. The requirements for Carver Center have not changed, and students must be tested and identified as gifted and talented in order to be accepted to attend this campus. Carver Center does not admit students through a lottery process. Once your application has been processed, the Advanced Academics Department will share more information about the testing process. Online, www.midlandisd.net/apply or www.midlandisd.net/skyward. This article is called Biz Brief. It's entitled, Halliburton Says Oil Scarcity Likely, from Bloomberg. Halliburton Company, the biggest provider of fracking, warned that the world is headed into a period of scarcity for oil after 7 years of underinvestment following crude's plummet from $100 a barrel in 2014. For the first time in a long time, we'll see a buyer looking for a barrel of oil as opposed to a barrel of oil looking for a buyer, Jeff Miller, chief executive officer at the Houston-based oilfield contractor, told an audience at the World Petroleum Congress on Monday. Halliburton has seen spending by crude explorers outside the U.S. and Canada cut by roughly half compared with historical norms, Miller said. This is the community from the front page. And this article is entitled, MDC Gets Update on Investment in Healthcare Effort, by Mella McEwen. Members of the Midland Development Corporation's board got an update on one of its significant investments, healthcare, at Monday's monthly board meeting. Dr. Timothy Benton, Regional Dean of the School of Medicine, Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center at the Permian Basin, detailed for the board the center's efforts to meet the region's healthcare needs. To add physicians and fill in the gaps in healthcare needs, he said the region must grow their own physicians. Statistics show that if physicians train here, there's a greater chance they'll remain in the area. The center is seeking a federal grant to help become a rural health center of excellence and a Hispanic primary care center, he said. Being able to offer excellent health care is important for the communities of the Permian Basin to grow economically, he added. TTUHSC has expanded its offerings in the Permian Basin from family care to internal medicine to psychiatry, which it has offered since 2016, and obstetrics and gynecology. The goal, Benton said, is to add other services like surgery programs next year. He said the goal is also to expand its internal medicine program to offer fellowships in subspecialties like cardiology, which he said would be a stepping stone to adding programs in neurology and pediatrics in the future. The center's Permian Basin centers are training physicians not only in rural medicine, but urban medicine in Ector and Midland counties. The center's rural training program in six counties outside Midland and Ector counties is the largest in the state, according to Benton. Benton reported that the center will have its first two graduates from the psychiatric program in June 2022. Another aspect of TTUHSC's efforts is its partnership with Midland College on a physician assistant program, which is due to complete its faculty facility expansion in April 2022. That will see enrollment expand from 60 students to 72. With plans to expand enrollment further to 100 students in the future. The program is also seeking a federal grant to allow it to offer stipends to its students. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, ConocoPhillips Offers Investors $1 Billion in Payouts, by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. ConocoPhillips unveiled a $1 billion variable dividend as the second largest driller in the Permian Basin aims to boost investor returns in the next year. The new quarterly dividend will be set based on forward oil prices, cash flow, and other factors, and could result in 8 cash payouts every year beginning in January 2022, according to a statement Monday. It's the largest effort by the company to raise shareholder return after posting the highest quarterly profit in a decade. ConocoPhillips has said it plans to hand out about $7 billion in total to investors in 2022, a 16% increase from 2021. The company also said it will spend about $7.2 billion with shale operations counting for about 60% of that total. That's up from about $5.3 billion this year. The spending boost comes just months after a pair of major acquisitions that made it the second biggest oil driller in the country's largest oil basin. The recent purchases of Concho Resources Inc. and Royal Dutch Shell PLC's Permian assets enabled ConocoPhillips to surpass Chevron Corporation as the Permian's number two crude producer, according to the research firm Enverus. This article is entitled, Big Oil Chiefs Say World Will Need Oil, Gas for Years, by Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. The chief executives of the two largest U.S. oil companies on Monday reiterated their beliefs that the world will continue to rely on fossil fuels for years to come, even as society shifts toward cleaner forms of energy. ExxonMobil CEO Darren Woods and Chevron CEO Mike Wirth told thousands of attendees at the first full day of the World Petroleum Congress in downtown Houston that they shared the world's concerns about climate change and touted their goals and efforts to reduce their carbon emissions. Woods and Wirth, however, said they believe oil and natural gas will remain the world's choice for affordable and reliable energy for decades. The growth of emissions-free energy is good for society and an objective of our company supports, Woods said. The fact remains that under most critical scenarios, including net zero pathways, oil and natural gas will continue to play a significant role in meeting society's needs. Oil and gas continue to play a central role in meeting the world's energy needs, and we play a central way in delivering them in a lower carbon way, Wirth said. Our products make the world run, and we can make it run even better. A debate over the future of fossil fuels is playing out at the World Petroleum Congress, the triennial energy conference that brings together the world's energy ministers and professionals for a week of panel discussions and trade exhibits. The conference, held in Houston for the first time in three decades, was postponed last year because of the global pandemic. While European oil majors have expanded into wind and solar power to prepare for a low-carbon future, Exxon and Chevron are investing heavily in carbon capture and storage, hydrogen and biofuels, reflecting their beliefs in the viability of fossil fuels if they can mitigate harmful carbon emissions. Woods cautioned against a disruptive energy transition, adding that many people take for granted the benefits of fossil fuels and forget that there are billions of people in developing countries who lack access to affordable energy. Exxon, which on Monday pledged to make its Permian Basin operations net zero by 2030, is planning to invest $15 billion on low-carbon projects by 2027, including carbon capture projects in Europe and Asia, and a biofuels refinery in Canada. The Texas oil giant is also working with 10 energy companies to develop a $100 million carbon capture hub in the Houston area that could capture 100 million metric tons of carbon emissions from the city's refineries and chemical plants by 2040, equivalent to the greenhouse gas emissions from more than 20 million cars. Chevron said its Southern California refinery has begun producing sustainable aviation fuel, a combination of traditional jet fuel and renewable biofuels such as used cooking oils, which Delta Airlines is using to power some of its flights. The California oil major also is capturing methane emitted by dairy farms and converting the greenhouse gas into renewable natural gas. This article is entitled, Oil Rises Over $69 as Virus Fears Ease, from Bloomberg. Oil climbed amid broader market gains on reports that early cases of the Omicron COVID-19 variant have been fairly mild, easing concern about a possible blow to demand. West Texas Intermediate rose 4.9% to $69.49 on Monday, a one-week high. Initial data on Omicron from South Africa, the epicenter of the outbreak, doesn't show a resulting surge of hospitalizations. Markets across the globe have been roiled since the variant emerged in recent weeks, prompting concerns about a potential hit to the economic rebound. West Texas Intermediate for January delivery rose $3.23 to settle at $69.49 a barrel in New York. It seems Wall Street is optimistic that the growth story is still intact, as Omicron seems like it might be leading to less serious illnesses than Delta, said Ed Moya, senior market analyst at Awanda Corporation. White House medical advisor Anthony Fauci said Monday that there doesn't look to be a great degree of severity to the new strain, while cautioning it's too early to be certain. Omicron has so far spread to at least 17 U.S. states. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia increased its oil prices for customers in Asia and the U.S. for January, just days after the OPEC Plus alliance agreed to boost output for the same month. Prices for its high sulfur barrels in Asia were the highest since at least 2000. The U.S. said over the weekend the chances of Iran joining the nuclear deal may be slipping away. The briefing was one of the most pessimistic American assessments of the negotiations yet, dampening any expectations of a quick return of Iranian oil to the market. While oil on Friday capped a sixth consecutive week of declines, the longest stretch since 2018, it has begun to recover from the stark drop that began in late November when Omicron led to renewed restrictions on travel. OPEC Plus decided to keep adding barrels to the market in January, but essentially put a floor under prices by giving itself the option to change the plan at short notice. The oil market seems to now be convinced that higher price levels are warranted and premiums are added to the bargains of last week, Louise Dixon, a senior oil markets analyst at Rystad Energy, wrote in a note to clients. Saudi Aramco raised its key Arab Light grade for customers in Asia by 60 cents from December to $3.30 a barrel above a benchmark, according to a statement from the state producer. That followed comments last week from Aramco Chief Executive Officer Amin Nasser that he was very optimistic about demand and the market had overreacted to Omicron. Bids are due Monday for the first 32 million barrels of crude planned for release from U.S. government stockpiles. The release is part of the Biden administration's effort to lower energy costs and tackle surging gasoline prices, which touched a seven-year high last month. Although winning bids won't be announced until December 14th, at least two international oil refiners have expressed interest in the swap, according to people familiar with the matter.
Good morning. I am Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, December 7th, 2021. 101-year-old returns to Pearl Harbor to remember those lost. Honolulu. When Japanese bombs began falling on Pearl Harbor, U.S. Navy Seaman First Class David Russell first sought refuge below deck on the USS Oklahoma. But a split-second decision on that December morning 80 years ago changed his mind and likely saved his life. They started closing that hatch, and I decided to get out of there, Russell, now 101, said in a recent interview. Within 12 minutes, his battleship would capsize under a barrage of torpedoes. Altogether, 429 sailors and Marines from the Oklahoma would perish, the greatest death toll from any ship that day, other than the USS Arizona, which lost 1,177. Russell plans to return to Pearl Harbor on Tuesday for a ceremony in remembrance of the more than 2,300 American troops killed in the December 7th, 1941 attack that launched the U.S. into World War II. About 30 survivors and 100 other veterans from the war are expected to observe a moment of silence at 7:55 a.m. the minute the attack began. Survivors, now in their late 90s or older, stayed home last year due to the coronavirus pandemic and watched a live stream of the event instead. Russell is traveling to Hawaii with the Best Defense Foundation, a nonprofit founded by former NFL linebacker Donnie Edwards, that helps World War II veterans revisit their old battlefields. He recalls heading topside when the attack started because he was trained to load anti-aircraft guns and figured he could help if any other loader got hurt. But Japanese torpedo planes dropped a series of underwater missiles that pummeled the Oklahoma before he could get there. Within 12 minutes, the hulking battleship capsized. Those darn torpedoes, they just kept hitting us and kept hitting us. I thought they'd never stop, Russell said. That ship was dancing around. Russell clambered over and around toppled lockers while the battleship slowly rolled over. You had to walk sort of sideways, he said. Once he got to the main deck, he crawled over the ship's side and eyed the USS Maryland moored next door. He didn't want to swim because leaked oil was burning in the water below. Jumping, he caught a rope hanging from the Maryland and escaped to that battleship without injury. He then helped pass ammunition to the Maryland's anti-aircraft guns. After the battle, Russell and two others went to Ford Island, next to where the battleships were moored, in search of a bathroom. A dispensary and enlisted quarters there had turned into a triage center and place of refuge for hundreds of wounded, and they found horribly burned sailors lining the walls. Many would die in the hours and days ahead. Most of them wanted a cigarette, and I didn't smoke at that time, but I got a pack of cigarettes and some matches, and I lit their cigarettes for them, Russell said. You could feel for those guys, but I couldn't do anything, just light a cigarette for them and let them puff the cigarettes. Russell still thinks about how lucky he was. He ponders why he decided to go topside on the Oklahoma, knowing most of the men who stayed behind likely were unable to get out after the hatch closed. In the first 2 days after the bombing, a civilian crew from the Pearl Harbor Navy shipyard rescued 32 men trapped inside the Oklahoma by cutting holes in its hull, but many others perished. Most of those who died were buried in anonymous Honolulu graves marked as unknowns because their remains were too degraded to be identified by the time they were removed from the ship between 1942 and 1944. In 2015, the Defense POW/MIA Accounting Agency exhumed 388 sets of those remains in hopes of identifying them with the help of DNA technology and dental records. They succeeded with 361. Russell's brother-in-law was among them. Fireman First Class Walter Boone Rogers was in the fire room, which got hit by torpedoes, Russell said. The military identified his remains in 2017, and he's since been reburied at Arlington National Cemetery. Russell remained in the Navy until retiring in 1960. He worked at Air Force bases for the next two decades and retired for good in 1980. His wife, Violet, passed away 22 years ago, and he now lives alone in Albany, Oregon. He drives himself to the grocery store and the local American Legion post in a black Ford Explorer while listening to polka music at top volume. When he's not hanging out with other veterans at the Legion, he reads military history and watches TV. He keeps a stack of 500-piece puzzles to keep his mind sharp. For decades, Russell didn't share much about his experiences in World War II because no one seemed to care. But the images from Pearl Harbor still haunt him, especially at night. When I was in the VA hospital, there in San Francisco, they said, "We want you to talk about World War II." And I told them, "When we talk about it, people don't believe us. They just walk away. So now people want to know more about it. So we're trying to talk about it. We're trying to talk about it, and we're just telling them what we saw." He said, "You can't forget it." Top lawmen raised more than $2,632 for charity. Griffiths wins Red Kettle Challenge. The top two lawmen in Odessa volunteered Saturday for a good-natured challenge to raise money for the Salvation Army of Odessa. The two, Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths and OPD Chief Michael Gerke, rang the bells at the Eastside Walmart on Saturday afternoon to see who could raise the most funds to help local families during the Christmas season. Griffiths raised $2,035.87 to win bragging rights this year, while Gerke raised $596.45. Salvation Army Major Luis Melendez announced the total raised was $2,632.32. The good cheer will help needy Odessans have a happy Christmas through a number of holiday programs by the Salvation Army. Griffiths and Gerke both served on the board of the Salvation Army and offered some good-natured ribbing during the 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. challenge Saturday. Special guests came out to help the two, including McGruff, the crime dog, and Grinch. Commissioners wrap redistricting. Sheriff's patrol vans get fully equipped. Ector County commissioners at 10 a.m. today will consider the final adoption of realigned commissioners and justices of the peace precincts according to guidelines from the U.S. Department of Justice and recommendations from Austin law firm Bickerstaff, Heath, Delgado, and Acosta. Effective January 1st, Commissioner Don Stringer, Precinct 3, and Commissioner Armando S. Rodriguez's District 4 will move west into Commissioner Mike Gardner's Precinct 1 because Precinct 1 had become overpopulated since the 2010 U.S. Census. Stringer currently represents 32,457 people, Rodriguez 36,596, and Mike Gardner 53,831, while Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons's constituency at 41,505 is within 1% of the newly required 41,098 and does not need to be altered. Bickerstaff Heath attorney Claudia Russell told the court October 26th. The census showed that the county had experienced a 19.9% growth in population from 137,083 to 164,399, Russell said. The Precinct 1 encompasses western Odessa and the west side of the county. Precinct 2, northeast Odessa and Gardendale area. Precinct 3, most of the city. And Precinct 4, southeast Odessa and the county's south side. In other business, the court will consider making a $302,600 appropriation to equip the 27 Chevrolet Tahoe patrol vans that were recently being delivered to the sheriff's office after the vehicles were received from Parkway Chevrolet in Tomball, northwest of Houston. They were equipped with laptop docking stations and input car adapters from GTS Technology Solutions in Austin. In-car cameras and AED first response defibrillators from Axon Enterprise of Scottsdale, Arizona, and H2S gas monitors from Loaded Dice Safety of Odessa. Sheriff Mike Griffiths has said the Tahoes would give him enough vehicles to allow deputies to take them home at the ends of their shift, increasing the law enforcement presence in their neighborhoods and enabling the deputies to respond to emergencies more quickly. The vans were bought with $2.5 million generated by the 1.25-cent rural sales tax that the voters approved in November 2018. Departing from their usual pattern of meeting on the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month in deference to the Christmas season, the court will also accept a $23,000 donation from Barnhart Bolt and Special Fasteners to the Sheriff's Office and review a ground lease contract between Permian Basin Supply and Blackwood Investment Properties at 194 Terminal Drive at Odessa Airport Schlemeyer Field. Quick hits, empty stocking in soon. The Empty Stocking Fund needs your help to reach this year's goal of $100,000 with only 10 days left to give. A generous matching challenge from the Sewell family of companies has been offered to match donations up to $50,000. Funds stay in Ector County and help needy families like that of Monica, not her real name. This family is struggling, and Monica is a single mom surviving without child support to raise her child. This family can be helped through the Empty Stocking Fund, an annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army. Empty Stocking Funds go for a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Zip codes for both are 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2.1 million. Donate online at https://give.salvationarmytexas.org/give/371871/#!/checkout. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 26,713 total cases, 555 deaths. Midland County, 29,595 total cases, 389 deaths. Texas, 4,351,335 total cases, 74,169 deaths. U.S. cases, 49,002,475 total confirmed and 785,655 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Town Hall Events. State Representative Brooks Landgraf has scheduled the following upcoming town hall events. Today, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., Andrews Senior Center, 310 West Broadway Street, Andrews. Thursday, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., Poor Daddy's Barbecue, 123 North Mulberry Street, Kermit. During these events, Landgraf will discuss the 2021 legislative sessions. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/5FJV3C6F. Volunteers are needed for the Food for the Hungry concert featuring Zach Williams with special guest Ann Wilson from 5:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Wednesday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM, 1788 Midland. To volunteer or more information, visit tinyurl.com/U5Y4UV2Y. Rain Beer 10 Event. Museum of the Southwest, 1705 West Missouri Avenue, Midland, has scheduled a Rain Beer 10 event from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Wednesday. The tickets include the Pat Green Concert, beverage tasting, heavy hors d'oeuvres, and an open bar. To purchase tickets or for more information, call 432-683-2882 or visit tinyurl.com/HU8R8BRR. Zach Williams, I Don't Want Christmas to End Tour. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM, 1788 Midland, will present Zach Williams' I Don't Want Christmas to End Tour at 7:30 p.m. Wednesday. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. For tickets or information, visit wagnernoel.com. String Quartet Performance. Permian Basin String Quartet are scheduled to perform from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 a.m. Thursday at the Petroleum Museum, 1500 I-20 Midland. The Permian Basin String Quartet is a resident quartet of the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale and is comprised of the principal string players of the orchestra. The quartet members are Amy Who's Jack, Alejandro Bomez Guillen, Sarah Cranor, and Conrad Sklar. Drinks and desserts will be provided. Admission is free. Visit tinyurl.com/4S8KHUAB. Art Talk, Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4904 East University Boulevard, has scheduled an art talk event for 6 p.m. Thursday. Discuss about the selected work for the Ellen Noel Art Museum's permanent collection of artwork. For more information, call 432-550-9696 or visit www.noelartmuseum.org. Active shooter getting out alive. Sunset Heights Baptist Church, 2401 West 16th Street, has scheduled an active shooter getting out alive from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Thursday. Pre-registration is required for this event. The event is free and open to the public. For more information, visit tinyurl.com/2S3FKR3V. J-Lo horse-drawn carriage rides. The Junior League of Odessa will once again be hosting horse-drawn carriage rides through Shiloh in Emerald Forest, a press release stated. This will be the fourth year JLO has offered carriage rides to the community. This year, there will be six different evenings of rides. Each ride is about 20 minutes long. The event will be held on Thursday through Saturday and December 14th through 16th. The rides will begin each evening at 6:30 p.m. and the last ride will be at 8:50 p.m. Available carriages have seating for 4, 6, and 12 people. Tickets are now on sale for the community. All of the proceeds raised from ticket sales will benefit JLO. Food trucks will also be available on site. For more information, call 432-332-0095 or email carriages@jloodessa.org. We Need Christmas. Compassion will present Matthew West, We Need Christmas, Thursday at the Andrews County Expo, 1441 Texas 175 Andrews. Doors open at 6 p.m. for VIP and concerts start at 7 p.m. VIP is $50, general admission is $25 in advance or $30 at the door, and groups $22 for 10 or over. For tickets or more information, call 432-664-4910 or wydc.org or tinyurl.com/A8Z4AWVA. Mariachi Christmas. The Hispanic Cultural Center of Midland will present UTRGV Mariachi Etzlan and Ballet Folklorico Mariachi Christmas at 6:30 p.m. Thursday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland. Cost is $25 for adults and $10 for children under 12. For more information, email hispanicculturalcenter@gmail.com or visit tinyurl.com/JHWEU4WF. A Merry Christmas Market. A Merry Christmas Market has been scheduled for 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday and from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday at 120 North Main Street, Andrews. There will be local vendors, sweet treats, and photo opportunity with Mr. Grinch. Visit tinyurl.com/2Y63YEC6. Winter Wonderland West Texas Shopping Expo. Winter Wonderland West Texas Shopping Expo has been scheduled from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday and from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Admission is $5 at the door and $12 and under are free. Portion of the proceeds will be donated to Greenwood Youth Sports. Visit tinyurl.com/WKTFMPPB or MidlandHorseshoe.com. Toy Drive. PC Group All City Real Estate will be collecting new toys for local children in need from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday. Donate a new unwrapped toy at any of the following open houses: 1701 East 11th Street, 1531 East 11th Street, 9912 Rainbow, 109 Course Road, and 514 East 92nd Street in Andrews at 5395 Southeast 1800 Andrews. For more information, call 432-272-0297. Landgraf draws challenger for District 81 seat. Odessan Casey Gray has filed to challenge GOP incumbent State Representative Brooks Landgraf in the March 1st primary for the District 81 seat in the Texas House of Representatives. District 81 represents Ector, Winkler, Ward, and Loving counties. Gray's news release detailed that he is retired from the U.S. Navy and the Texas National Guard. His news release stated that he is a Christian, conservative Republican. Our nation is at a critical point in our history. Never has the radical socialist agenda threatened so many of our American ideals of freedom and liberty. At times like this, the nation looks to Texas to lead, and our leaders must demonstrate courageous servant leadership, the news release stated. Gray, in 2020, ran unsuccessfully in the GOP primary to replace outgoing U.S. Representative Mike Conaway. Current U.S. Representative August Pfluger won the primary and later the seat. Gray, in a crowded field of candidates, garnered 3.7% of the votes, or 3,978 votes, to Pfluger's winning 52.15% of the votes, or 55,802 votes. Council set to hear treatment plant bids. The Odessa City Council is scheduled to hear consideration for bids involving the water treatment plant rehabilitation and miscellaneous upgrades project. Odessa Public Works Director Thomas Kerr will give the presentation during a work session beginning at 3 p.m. today on the fifth floor of City Hall in the City Council Chambers located at 411 West 8th Street. The consideration to award bids is for algicide, sodium hydroxide, liquid ammonium sulfate, liquid gas chloride, and liquid aluminum sulfate. The combined total of the five bids would be $1.14 million. According to the City Council agenda, algicide is used for algae control in winter and summer months. Liquid ammonium sulfate is used with chlorine for disinfection of the water, and sodium hydroxide is used to dechlorinate effluent water. Liquid gas chlorine is used for disinfection of the water, while the liquid aluminum sulfite is a coagulant in removing small particles from the water. City of Odessa Assistant City Manager Philip Urrutia is scheduled to speak with the City Council about considering approval for purchasing two street sweeper trucks for the street department. The purchase would reportedly be for a TYMCO 600 regenerative air sweeper from Timeco and a Schwar M6SE mechanical sweeper from Heel of Texas. The total of the two trucks would be $570,088. The City Council will also hear an opioid settlement presentation given by the Office of the Attorney General. There will be a Board of Survey update from Eddie Shelton. Mike Ferris, Odessa's Information Technology Director, will talk about considering the annual renewal of Motorola P25 radio system maintenance and support. The renewal would cost $447,693. Odessa Director of Building Services Scott Anderson is scheduled to speak about considering the award of a base bid for air handler unit C4 and alternate bid number 1 of the existing air handler C1 motor for the municipal court unit. Odessa Risk Management Director Daryl Wells is scheduled to speak about a variety of items, including consider renewal of group life insurance, AD&D coverage, and retiree life insurance with Standard Insurance Company. Consider renewal of medical stop-loss insurance with Berkshire Hathaway. Consider renewal of contract for benefits claims administration. Consider renewal of contract for property insurance with TML Intergovernmental Risk Pool. Consider renewal of excess workers' comp insurance with Safety National Casualty. Consider renewal of public entity liability insurance with State Retention Group, and command adoption of the Family Health Project revision January 1, 2022. STEM partnership up for discussion. The partnership with the University of Texas Permian Basin STEM Academy will be discussed by the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees during their work session set for 6 p.m. today. The meeting will be held in the first floor boardroom of the ECISD Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. A STEM task force consisting of STEM parents, teachers, and university leaders was charged with identifying viable options that address the goals of maintaining the STEM academic model, maintaining access for teachers, staff, and students, and providing a pathway for permanent facilities to meet the long-term needs of the school. According to an Odessa American article from June 31st, supplemental agenda material said through ECISD's Call for Quality School, UTPB STEM successfully completed a rigorous process conducted by a diverse committee that included application, screening, partner capability interview, and overall evaluation using a TEA model rubric. ECISD and the University of Texas of the Permian Basin have a strong partnership represented by student dual credit offerings, opportunity culture collaboration, talent pipeline support, and CTE offerings. This innovative partnership with UTPB STEM will allow ECISD to expand high-quality choice offerings for students in the district with an opportunity to learn on the campus of our local university, the material said. The board will also hear presentations on early childhood and special services.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.